a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go. I have lost track of what episode this is. In the early 220s, somewhere. It's been that kind of week, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so there's a little housekeeping here. Many technology mea culpas. It's been a rough tech week. It's like, oh goodness, man. So we had some skipping and stuff on a couple of episodes ago, and I was trying to figure out, and so I thought I had gotten the impression that the show was just unusable. And then yesterday I came to do a show, and I basically did the same show, some of the same topics and everything over again, thinking that we weren't going to be able to use that show before. And I talked about some important stuff that I thought was worth repeating, mostly about the police and race and system and all of that. And then it turns out that it was only the first 5 minutes and it wasn't that bad. So we actually kept that episode. So I did a rerun yesterday and I apologize. So we had tech problems, and then the tech problems caused a rerun because I underestimated how not bad the tech problems were. So coffee slurp time here. Oh my goodness. I tell you what, that is delicious. I'll tell you what it is here in a little while. So anyway, there you go. Mea culpa, mea culpa. Okay, so how did the Cardinal game turn out? Evidently, okay, so the bad news is clearly there was voodoo in the area, some type of occult activity, curses, some type of supernatural shenanigans, and the Cardinals lost to the Rockies, like got roundly beat. I'm glad I wasn't in the area, because it turns out I didn't make the game. But that's good, because I mean it sounds like it was a spiritual kind of a sketchy environment, clearly, because the Cardinals lost, and we know that the only way that could have possibly have happened would have been voodoo or some type of spiritual shenanigans, if you will, even if you won't, you might. And So I got out of work and to go to the game, and I knew I was going to be a little bit late because I just had some stuff that had to be done. So I got out, and right about as the game was starting, I headed north. But that's no big deal. It's like 30 minutes tops, right? So there's all this crazy traffic, you know. I'm not even going to get distracted and start griping about Denver traffic. You know what I think about Denver traffic. So it was just in the middle of the dang day, though. I'm like, what? Really? Anyway, so ugly traffic going north. No wrecks, no nothing, just Denver. And then I get off downtown, and there's just like, the good news is Denver is exploding right now. We're thriving in this city. It's like, it's really, really happening here. There's just so much cool stuff happening and being built and everything. The bad news is that just causes a metric butt ton of construction. And there's just all this construction downtown. And I already get a little turned around downtown because, God love it, it's just not a grid. It's like a grid with a bunch of other grid like laid on top of it. But then most of the streets don't go through, and they turn into one way in places. And you got to figure out where you're going. And I got turned around trying and took the wrong turn, had to go all the way around Union Station to get back to where I was trying to go because it was one way. I just didn't know my way around. And I was trying to save my phone battery because I wanted to do a Facebook Live video on my stupid iPhone. I'm about to turn in and get the new one, I think, because the battery is just sucking hard. So anyway, so by the time I finally got over by the ballpark, all the parking lots were full. Now, there was one, and my foot was kind of hurting. I get like some pain in my foot sometimes and in my knee. And I was hurting a little bit. I didn't want to walk a mile or something. And so except for the kind of the far off parking lots, I was willing to pay like $20-$25 for parking, but they were just all full. And so I was trying to find a spot, and I was listening to the game on the radio, and we were losing, which made me wary of clear and obvious spiritual shenanigans going on. And I finally realized that it's going to be like the bottom of the sixth by the time I can actually get in. And nobody was able to get off work and come with me. So I had 4 free tickets and no one with me in the middle of the day. And I was just finally like, you know what? To heck with it. I'm done. I'm just going to go home. And so I just went home. I went and got Chinese food, actually, and got a God wink from the fortune cookie, which I'm not saying it was a God wink. I'm saying I'm taking it as a God wink. It was a beautiful fortune cookie. Speaking of fortune cookies, this is something that's not on my notes, but I had an idea at one point with some friends of mine. So if anybody steals this idea and does it, you have to give me like 10%. So we were talking one time about doing misfortune cookies. Like, and we were even going to like use food coloring, make them like black, it's dark. Like, and you would open the cookie and it would say, no, it's not all in your head. She is cheating on you. Or like, you're like, it's probably malignant or something. Just like your duck. That was my favorite one. Duck. We're just going to put, or maybe like we would go the route of like really existential kind of things, like, you know, the wise man does such and such, but it doesn't matter because life is meaningless. So just put a bunch of Camus and Sartre quotes on there, you know, and to continue the stream of consciousness here. This is all not in my notes right here. Miss Fortune Cookies was not in there. I'll find the URL and put it in the show notes. LAist did the funniest. They did like a real estate article on Leonardo DiCaprio's mansion in Malibu. They're on the Pacific Coast Highway. And the agonizing experience of being human. So it's like, they're like, this mansion has such and such, this mid-century bungalow with ocean views that has this and this and this and this, and it explains it all. And says, but it doesn't matter because in the end, everything is meaningless and blah, blah. And they call up this unsuspecting real estate agent. And they go, hey, thanks for taking our call. Is something along the lines of like, hey, this house is really beautiful. Yeah, it's a, you know, Camus said that Sartre said that at the heart of all things that are beautiful, there's something inhuman. And this house is really beautiful. Do you think there's something inhuman about it? And she's like, wow, that's not the question I was expecting. It's like, so they literally asked a bunch of really absurdist existential things of a real estate agent. I really love such things. I love good, positive, nice trolling of reality. It's like, yeah, I just love that. So it's probably worth reading. I'll put the link up anyway. So Maggie Smith is in the house, in the Mile High House, that is, in Denver, and soon to be in the house that I am in, because I am broadcasting today from a bunker somewhere below a center of the new evangelization nestled somewhere in the Rockies, not unlike NORAD. And lovely and talented Maggie Smith is on her way here. And no, not the actress, the beloved by all in Denver, former admissions person at the Institute here, who is a Steubenville grad and a friend of ours here. And she was kind of a center of the Denver Catholic young adult scene, and everyone adores Maggie. I adore Maggie. And she moved back to Ohio, and it was a great loss. And so she's on her way down here. So last night we had a barbecue, and I was hanging out with the CNA crew from Catholic News Agency, and Peter Zelasco and Carl Bunderson. And in addition to Carl Bunderson, Sophia, his wife, was there with baby Maria. And I just like to point out that baby Maria loves me. In fact, I was getting serious snuggles last night. I was getting snuggles that like no one gets besides like family. I was getting like family level snuggles from this baby. And I just like to point out that baby Maria loves me way, way more than Sarah Stacy. In case you didn't understand, baby Maria loves Sarah Stacy, but not as much as me. Such inside jokes. Anyway, so, hey, Calyx is blowing up right now. Absolutely amazing. Three or four new active projects coming on. So different. So many just providential kind of options for showing what a community can do. A hospitality space to create community. You know, I'm just really, really humbled and stoked on the stuff that's coming my way. So I'm going to be like on the road a ton in October, to the point that I broke down and applied for TSA pre and for clear, because I'm just not going to have time to sit in all those lines all the time. And I've been meaning to do that for a while anyway. And if you've been thinking about doing that, man, it was surprisingly easy. All I have to do now is go out to the airport. And you can do clear is just to get you through the line fast. You can do that on the actual trip to the airport. Just go early and get fingerprinted and stuff. And they let you use it right then. TSA pre, where you don't have to take all your jacket, and your shoes and your belt and take your bag out and all that. That takes a while to get kind of cleared with a background check. But I started the process on both. So I guess I'm gearing up to be an actual road warrior, which I am kind of scared about. So things are going good. I'm more work on the strategic plan this weekend before another board meeting on Monday. So more prayers for Calyx would be appreciated if you hear this. So all right, enough with this chatty first segment. Chatty first segment is over. It's time to get serious. Actually, it's kind of be kind of chatty today. Let's go to the break, and when we get back, I've got more amazing stuff up my sleeve. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, we've covered my tech woes. Oh, you know what? I forgot something. I admit, when I talked about the Cardinals game, to do a public semi-apology to a certain Disney princess turned warrior princess, not unlike Xena, the warrior prince. Like Xena, the Disney princess now. And I had referred to the Cardinals game as opposed to the Rockies game because I'm a Cardinals fan, and I said that you name the game after if it's someone else's stadium, if only one of the two teams is actually a baseball team, you name it after them. That's why it's a Cardinals game. And I got in trouble for saying that the Rockies weren't a team. It's just playful banter. You know, I don't wish any ill will on the Rockies. I've embraced the Broncos heartily since moving here. If the Rockies got good, I wouldn't get mad. I would even be a fan. I would go, and as long as they weren't playing the Cardinals, I would be a Rockies fan. I'm a member. I live in Denver, Colorado. Go Rockies. I'm fine. As long as they're not playing the greatest team on earth, the St. Louis Cardinals. So a semi-public apology to Xena, the Disney princess. I love you dearly. Thanks for putting up with me. All right. So I had kind of a cool situation this morning. I came in early to do some work on Calyx and stuff, and I was hanging out in my own cafe, the one that I run, which I like doing. I like spending time in the cafes that I run and experiencing them from the other side of the room the way a customer would experience it. Something that I don't get to do all the time. And because you get a very different perspective. Stuff that you thought was a really good idea, like, well, that's really annoying. That's loud. Or, no, that music level is not right or something. Things that seemed good when you just kind of checked them quickly. You know, when you actually spend some time there, you kind of get a feel for it. And you're constantly tuning. If you have a space, you're constantly tuning. So anyway, so I was hanging out, just got the computer out in my favorite booth on the end. And the lovely and talented Pia De Selene came in. So Pia is teaching a class here in the Denver campus and grouping them like, you know, every few weeks coming in and teaching like two or three right in a row. And so Pia was in town. And if you haven't read Pia De Selene, she's really worth reading. Really interesting commentator, moral theologian type. Fellow graduate from Thomas Aquinas compound in Santa Paula, California. And a great example of kind of the best that school does put out. They're very, you know, very engaged in the modern world, very engaged through real serious principles, but some real serious wonder there too. I'm a fan of Pia. So I'm sitting there hanging out with Pia, and right after she came over and sat down and we started talking, and then Jason from Commonwealth came in. Now Jason is a solid Christian intellectual in his own right. One of the finest coffee roasters in the country. And he came over and sat down and we started talking, and it was just interesting. It was just an example of the kind of connections of three different people coming from three different perspectives with three different things that they do and do well, in a related for sure, but finding some common ground and having a conversation that started largely over kind of small talk about, you know, a coffee pot and some kind of a equipment stuff and everything. And we had a beautiful, short, but beautiful conversation that probably just wouldn't take place in the produce aisle. And I'm consistently converted to the power of the type of community, the easy leisure of hanging out. I'm a giant fan of that form, and it just, yeah, obviously that's what I do for a living. It's what I've been doing for forever, but every once in a while, I just have a moment where I experience it kind of fresh and I go, hey, look what's possible there. So that happened today. I saw what was possible and I enjoyed it. All right. If you haven't seen it, I'm going to put the YouTube link up, and there's a little bit of language in it. So, be forewarned. If you're listening to my show, you're not going to be offended by this. But anyway, the comedian Zach Galifianakis has, on funnyordie.com has this fake cable access show. It's like a really cheesy cable access show called Between Two Ferns. I mean, President Obama has been on it. All these people have been on it. And he's just a really awkward kind of boundary pushing kind of limit pushing comedian. I had to take a sip of this delicious coffee. Oh, I forgot to mention with Jason, when I was talking about Jason, the new Panama Carmen Estate, washed and natural, just came out from Commonwealth Coffee, and I'm sipping on the Panama Carmen Estate washed right now. Just a simple batch brew, and boy, is it just elegant and just gorgeous coffee. Just, man, beautiful. I'm telling you, that guy can roast and source some coffee. So Hillary Clinton went on Between Two Ferns. And if you haven't watched it, boy, is it worth it. It's really good. It's super, super funny. And watch it all the way to the end. Because, I mean, I think she knew what she was getting into, but, and they probably had really hammered this out, what was allowed. And I will say, you know, kudos to Hillary Clinton. She did a good job of acting and pretending to be kind of annoyed and kind of sardonic with him. And she did a good job. I mean, she knows that this is comedy and what she's doing. And she did a good job stepping into that context and playing along the rules of that context in a way that was still kind of, you know, okay for a politician to do. I was impressed. You did a good job. But Zach Galifianakis is hilarious. And this video is hilarious. And everybody I'm bumping into around the shop and stuff is going, oh, God, did you see the Galifianakis thing with Clint? It's like, it's, yeah, it's really worth watching. So I'm going to put it up. It's just, I'm just not even going to spoil it. I'm not going to tell you about any of the jokes or anything. It's just, I think there's people like Galifianakis, like Will Ferrell sometimes. Like my friend Frank Hogerby, back when he used to work at Shakespeare's Pizza 1,000 years ago and do prank calls on the pizza place across the street. There is a superpower of being able to keep a straight face while you're doing something absolutely hilarious. I think it's like an X-Men level superpower. It's like straight man. It's like, what's your superpower? I can say something mind-numbingly hilarious and keep a straight face while I'm doing it. I think that should be a superpower. All right. So speaking of Clinton, oh man, I am really just, as we get closer to the actual moment of this election and we see that no real viable third party has emerged that's catching any kind of decent, real, momentum at all. I mean, I have hopes for 2020 because I think that this is like, we've hit rock bottom and as a nation, we're going to go, both parties, third parties will now see that it's possible to do something given the right circumstances and they'll start preparing for 2020. And I think that we're going to wake up and go, Oh yeah, we did that. You know, it's just, I think that as a nation, we are going to be like that alcoholic that finally just goes, okay, look, we have a problem. We're just going to have to rethink some things. And, you know, and that is kind of, that's the hopeful part of this. I heard an Einstein quote. There was an NPR story talking about a new STEM academy in, a city out near Columbus, Ohio. And they had some screens and when you touched them, you touch the picture on the screen, it would give a quote. And one of them was Einstein sticking his tongue out. And when you touch his tongue, it said, you cannot solve a problem with the same thinking that the problem emerged out of. And that, or something along those lines. You can't solve a problem inside the same thinking. The system and the way of approaching things, the way of thinking about things that cause this problem, you can't use that same thing, that same approach to solve a problem. And I think that's, we're going to have a paradigm shift in some ways. And I am really predicting that something along the lines of like Catholic social doctrine and the type of platform you're seeing with the American Solidarity Party. And that's the only reason I'm thinking about. The reason that got me started is I need to register to vote here in Denver because I haven't done so yet. And I keep putting it off and I'm now realized it's like time to go register to vote. I need to do that. And I'm like, am I really going to do that? Do I even really want to be implicated? Do I really want to go out of my way to take part in this fiasco? And putting in a protest vote for Maturin for the American Solidarity Party is one of the only things that I could see myself doing. I just cannot see all the arguments for Supreme Courts and stuff like that. I cannot see myself taking part in, I cannot see myself voting for Trump and I can't see myself voting for Clinton. And I don't know that I value a protest vote enough to even bother. I think I'll just fast and pray that day. I don't know. I'm on the fence about the whole thing. I'm just really, really frustrated with the situation, as you know, if you listen to my show. All right, let's go to the break. I got a little bit more about this election I want to talk about, and then I'm going to move on to something more positive. You're listening to The Counter Position. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
Lynn Howe, we crave a hanging in his dark.
Redbox Media, now is a great way for you to go deeper with your favorite show or shows in our programming lineup. With our friend of the show opportunity, you get extra exclusive content from your favorite show hosts and lots of extra love from the shows and hosts you love. Become a friend of the show by clicking on the link on our website or app menu. Your $10 monthly premium membership will unlock an exclusive world just for you. Support your favorite show today as a friend of the show. Friend of the Show premium memberships exclusively for you with Breadbox Media.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right. So I was talking about this election cycle and how I'm trying to figure out if I'm even going to bother to register to vote in Denver, in Colorado. It's I mean, there's a lot of other stuff to vote on. I guess maybe I should. I'm a bad citizen when it comes to this stuff. I've lost any kind of connection in my mind between any action that I'm going to do in some kind of ballot box and any change is going to happen anywhere. At least in this time around, especially on the presidential side. But, you know, I think, and here's the thing is that I'm taking back my prediction. I predicted time and again that there's just no way that Clinton was going to win. I mean, there was no way that Clinton wasn't going to win, that she was going to beat Trump, and Trump was not going to win. There's just no way we're going to elect Donald Trump, that in the end, people will just be freaked out by that. And I, looking at everything I see now, I'm dialing that back. I think Trump is going to win. And that scares the living hell out of me, quite honestly. I don't think, my only hope is that he'll rule better than he ran. And he will realize that he is the CEO in him will kick in. He'll realize that he's completely out of his depth, that he's policy-wise, strategy-wise, knowledge-wise, he's completely out of his game. And we will have something more like an oligarchy at the top for 4 years, where he'll bring in a bunch of experts from these different fields and actually listen to them and let them kind of run their game. I mean, that might be our only hope there. Maybe, God willing, it'll go well. The problem is, I'm afraid it'll go, if it goes well, then it'll solidify that that's the kind of leader you need to be is Trump. It's like, because I think on the public face, he's still going to be himself. And he might be better than he is behind the scenes, which there's a lot of reports that he is better than his public image behind the scenes, that he's just gaming the system. He knows how lowbrow and how lowest common denominator you have to be, and you have to get kind of reality TV to win in America. But he's more reasonable behind closed doors. I don't know. I think the guy's a liberal anyway, for the most part. I think he's friends with the Clintons. I think he's a New York liberal that has decided to switch sides and use a bunch of entertainment based rhetoric to win. But I'm taking back my prediction. I'm predicting that Trump's going to win. And I hate that. I hate it. On a related note, the movie Idiocracy, which I've talked about several times in reference to Trump and this current election cycle, is going back in theaters. And I think that people are going to mistake it for a documentary because it looks strangely like our current reality, even though it's like this absurdist futurist thing. It's starting to look like it's less shocking than it used to be, because it's starting to look like how we relate to each other in public. We are starting to take on the coarse, anonymous, weird, reactionary, completely biased and unsubstantiated mode of communication from the internet and comm boxes and applying it to life. And it scares the absolute bejesus out of me. Yeah, so anyway, there's that documentary, Idiocracy, from it's coming back to theaters. So I'm not sure when and where, but all right. So I need to get out of the realm of politics for a second, and because I've got something important I want to talk about, but I need a little transition mode here. So there's this month, the cover of Outside Magazine has an article by has Tim Ferriss on it. And inside there's a big long article, kind of an excerpt from the new book by Tim Ferriss, which I forgot to find out what it's called. Let's go back to the top of the article. Tools of Titans. So Tim Ferriss is the author of The 4-Hour Workweek, The 4-Hour Body, The 4-Hour Chef, all these. He's the star of the Tim Ferriss Show. And he's a really interesting guy. He's kind of a bro, but he's your typical single guy that obsesses over stuff that most people don't have time to obsess over because he's single and he's got money. And he's, you know, but he really is kind of like obsessed with pushing the limits of human performance, not just in speed and agility and lifting a lot, but in things like learning things very quickly and de-stressing and running efficiently and optimally in a non-efficient world. And I think that Tim has brought, there's a few things in this article that are really interesting. I'm really looking forward to the book. They're basically all these insights he's gotten from interviewing tons and tons and tons and tons of people who are at the serious top of their game. You know, athletes and successful business guys and all these people. And he asked them questions like, what are the first five things you do in the morning? What's your morning routine like? What do you do? How do you recover from stress? How do you do this? What do you do? And he's kind of found a bunch of best practices that are really common to a lot of real seriously high performers in a lot of different arenas. And he's putting those all together into a book. Well, there's an excerpt from that book, or some excerpts and some words based on the book, article in Outside Magazine this month, and I kind of perused it a little bit, and it's really worth it's worth looking at. So I'll put the link in the show notes on Podbean, and I'm gonna go ahead and pony up to get the pre-release of this book, you know, to get this book when it comes out. I've read a couple of his other books, and I think I listen to his podcast some. I like Tim Ferriss. I think he performs a really serious service to humanity. He basically makes himself the guinea pig and lets himself become obsessed with certain ideas, and then makes himself the guinea pig and then tells us what worked and what didn't. And so real fast, before we go to a bigger, more heady topic, there's a few things he talked about in this video. So If the sound's shifting around today, I'm holding the microphone Dean Martin style here, so I'm shifting it back and forth when I take sips of coffee and use my computer, because I don't want to use my computer with my left hand, because I'll end up messing it up. Let's see here. So there's a few things that he talks about. Gymnastic strength training, which is interesting, because when Michael Miley was in town, for the Rival Sun show, he took a class, and I think it was from the same guy that he's talking about. They have actually a gym in Denver, I think, here. It may not be a different guy, same movement though, like the gymnastic strengths thing. But I'm not that interested in that. So I am trying to figure out what was the so two things that he talked about. Yeah, here's what I found interesting: was hot and cold. He talks about the deep benefits of like saunas and taking very hot baths and becoming hot adapted. And then he turns around, and I tell you what, this Wim Hof thing is going nuts. Once again, Michael Miley's all into it. My friend Justin, who's on my board, is all into it. Laird Hamilton, the surfer, is all into it. So Wim, the Iceman Hof, this guy does cold immersion and has breathing exercises and stuff to go with, like immersing yourself in ice water and taking cold showers and this breathing methods and stuff. And it's interesting that he goes back and forth between the two, and he talks in depth about the benefits of both heat adaption and cold adaption. And there's been some new research that I've been seeing around the internet about the link between the better, more metabolically active and associated with healthy, fit people version of fat called brown fat, and the ability for ice water baths to convert white fat to brown fat, which starts burning up. It's metabolically active and it burns. It's pretty interesting stuff. And but here's what I found interesting about all this. So he talks about some other interesting ideas about meditation and about recovery stuff. But he talks about a few things, both hot and cold. And later on, it's interesting. He talks about the Great Lakes hydrolyzed beef collagen. It's this this gelatin, which is I actually use. Say I was glad to see him recommend this gelatin for joints, and not only just the gelatin, the exact brand and the exact product that I found and use. But so you look at this hot cold and this cold and this hot thing and this cold thing, and it's kind of like it's like sleeping in a dark room and not having white light after a certain hour a day because of circadian rhythms and like paleo eating and all that. There is just we are still physically and mentally in a lot of ways, we are still very, very much our past. We are not everything that we think is kind of normal, like electric lights and what we're eating now and having internal heat, you know, having heat and air to, you know, not make us have to experience and endure extremes of cold and all kinds of really, really effective clothing to keep us, our bodies from having to experience a natural swing in temperatures and all that. I'm telling you this trend towards using art to recreate what used to just be nature there's a lot going on there. So I'm going to put that link up. I think there's a lot of good ideas, and I think it's definitely going to make me want to buy a book. So, all right, let's go to the break, and when we get back, I got one deep segment coming up. You're listening to The Counterposition.
Then all the color glass, that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. I've bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. Oh, here I am holding the mic like Dean Martin. Just like I tell you, body positions and body postures are so huge. It's so important. It's like so effective. It's just weird. I've talked about power postures in that TED talk and about smiling. Like my friend Ken Kramer on a retreat that I was on said that all you have to do is you don't even have to smile. Put a pen in your mouth. Like, listen, I'm biting on a pen, put a pen in my mouth. And now to hold this pen in my mouth, I have to have my cheeks raised. I have to spread my mouth out. I have my cheeks raised. My mouth forms into the shape of a smile. And there's been studies done that literally just putting a pen in your mouth because it mimics a smile will actually cause a reduction in cortisol and stuff and the different things, the stress hormones, and will create more of a positive mood because it looks like a smile. And we do that when it's happy, when we're happy. And so we are this type of being that the software and the hardware are so intricately linked that if you change the hardware, it acts as if that software that normally makes that happen is running. So if you act happy, if you smile, if you make these body postures of someone who's confident or not beat down or whatever, it literally changes your mood. It's like, it's really, really fascinating. So what that got me going on is there's a video, which I'm kind of frustrated. I can't find a link for it anywhere, but just on an internal Facebook link. So I'm going to try to find a better link for it. It's from the Diocese of Denver, the Archdiocese of Denver, and Divine Mercy Supportive Care. And it's just this beautiful, beautiful video talking about how rare life is and how rare the conditions to make even single cell life happen and how precious that is and how the fact that we exist as animals, that we exist as having wills and intellects and we're able to love and we're able to do this. And it's just, and how just infinitely beautiful each human being is and how just awe-inspiring each person is, how individual and how just worthy of respect and dignity everyone is. And it's shot in, you know, there's a really, really artful, beautiful way, probably using some kind of, I recognize how these videos are made. They're probably taking some high def, stock footage and putting it together. And they probably shot some of it and weaved it in and everything, but it's done in a very artful way, a new level of video coming out of, that office. I mean, really, I have friends that, work over there. I don't know who's behind this, but well done, guys. This is a really great video. But it got me thinking. I heard a woman being interviewed in Charlotte and about this whole riot thing and the Black Lives Matter movement and all the chaos that's happening out there. And she said the phrase, "My people." And it was on NPR, and the commentator said that there was something coming up they're going to talk about. She was making reference to, even though she is kind of upper class and lives in a different city now and had kind of got out of that neighborhood that she was raised in and stuff and was doing well, really, really well, and had a lot of privilege in her life, these are still my people. Now, she's referring to people as her people because of skin color and because of kind of economic status and because of their place in the power structure of being, you know, as she sees them, oppressed or whatever. And she says, "My people." And that got me thinking. That just got me saying, is that after watching this video and seeing all these different types of people and all these different things that make us so amazing and stuff like, who are my people? Who do we think of as our people? Is that a racial thing? Do I think of white people as my people because I'm of European descent? Is the ability to not think of people as my people based on a racial breakdown, is that white privilege? Do I have the privilege of thinking of default humanity and consider myself a part of humanity and not breaking myself out? Is that just because I'm part of the dominant, you know, the majority? I don't really think so. The best people I know of all different colors and all different economic backgrounds, of different creeds, different places they're from, the thing that binds all those people that are the best people I have ever met or seen is they love everyone. They try to, and they live in a place of really deep gratitude and wonder, especially towards the beauty of the human person. And I'm looking at, this is why I think Trump is so dangerous, and I think Clinton is so dangerous. I think that both of these politicians, even though they don't use the language the same way, I think they're both trying to divide us. I think that reality in the political world, in the entertainment world, even in the business world to a certain extent, is trying to divide us. It's trying to divide us in the sense that they want to use scare tactics and the leveraging of personal interest and group interest to make us retreat into the corner of each of our own tribes, be those racial or socioeconomic or creedal or whatever, that I'm supposed to be on the white team and on the middle class team. I think I'm middle class now. I looked up. With consulting, my income has gone up just a little bit in the last couple of years. I think I might technically be middle class now. I've spent most of my life as upper lower class. I think I'm technically lower middle class now. Depending on where you live, those boundaries are low. So am I supposed to be on like team lower middle class? Am I on team white? Am I on team Catholic? There's a great question. Is that a team? Is that a tribe that I need to get in and I need to speak the language of and I need to prefer over others? And I need to, because I'm a Catholic, do I need to be on team Catholic over team others, so to speak, as far as our interests? Or do I, as a Catholic, because I understand the big picture of who God is and what reality is and what the human person is, should that make me move towards identifying myself with everyone? You know, I remember Elder Zosima in Brothers Karamazov by Dostoevsky saying that we are all responsible for everyone. And I'm not there. The things that separate me, the things that separate me from someone who is a different color or a different socioeconomic class, the difference between tonight, there's going to be some guy throwing a rock through a window in Charlotte, and I'm going to be sitting in Denver, Colorado, and having a conversation with someone, or writing or reading a book. The difference between us is a difference of choices and a difference of reactions and a different, but they're all concepts in this sense. They're all somehow made. They're not nature. They're not things that are God-given. They don't have ultimate reality. These things are artifacts of culture, artifacts of history, artifacts of choices made. They're not nature. The thing that separates me from someone who's very, very different from me is not nature. It's not something given. And I think that we have to start consciously choosing to identify ourselves with the whole, to identify ourselves with people that what we have in common. And I think that the more we come to understand the reality of the human person in our position in the universe, in our position to our source, and that really compared to when you look at the glory of humanity in the smallness of its contingency, of its having been madeness, of it, as its dependency on another for existence. We are this smallness that is living with a borrowed being from something eternal and non-contingent, which is God. And yet we have this deep, deep worth because we're all created fearfully and wonderfully in his image and out of pure, unadulterated gift. I just think that if we start looking at that, so anyone who is contingent and made out of love and gift, and who is dependent upon love itself for their being, those are my people. That you are my people. I'm your people. We're all my people. I think that we have to start having a paradigm shift and moving out of those boundaries and beginning to love and have gratitude and appreciation for everyone, especially those of us that are very different from each other. And there you go. Let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition. Thanks for coming out. I'll take your place.
don't. I'll take your place, Marble Stone.